which is your host and organizer for today's event. The Career Conversation series is sponsored by the York University Alumni Relations, and we'd like to thank them for their generous support. We would also like to thank the faculty, Center for Student Success in the Faculty of Liberal Arts and Professional Studies, for partnering with us to organize this event today. So the purpose of the panel today is to provide you with some inspiration, some insight and advice, and an opportunity to connect with professionals, York alumni, who have graduated from various foreign language programs from York and moved on to do really interesting things in their careers. So today is an opportunity to hear a little bit about what they are doing and how they got started. So just a few reminders before we begin. If you haven't already done so, please make sure you've signed in at the registration table at the back. So you can certainly do that if you haven't done so. You can do that later on in the afternoon as well. If you could turn off your cell phones, that would be great, so this would be free of disruptions. I also want to point out that we are videotaping this event. So if you don't wish to be video recorded, then there is an opportunity later on to speak more privately with our panelists. So, and then there's a free open forum session as well. So if you don't mind being on video, then you can certainly ask and pose your questions at that point. Okay. And if you, the washrooms I've been told are on this level are closed, so you'll need to go downstairs to the basement level for the washroom. It's just down the hall. So the timeline for today, we will, for up until about 4:15, so on my immediate left is Leslie Sin Rojas, who is a teacher with the Toronto District School Board. And Leslie, welcome Leslie. Leslie, next to Leslie is Rebecca Smith, who is a customer service representative with the Ministry of Convention. You work for the Ontario government.
Yeah.
Which ministry?
Service Ontario,
Service
Government
Ontario.
Services.
Yeah. Okay. Ministry of Government Services,
yes.
I think that's why. And next to Rebecca, so welcome Rebecca. Next to Rebecca is Mary Lauren Amoroso,
yeah.
Who is the head of guidance at Lawrence Park Collegiate.
Yeah.
Before, Leslie, you were a teacher before that as well.
Mary, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Mary.
Yes, yes, elementary and secondary.
Andrea, you are the product manager global trade consulting at Livingston International.
Correct.
Welcome, Andrea. And then we are our final panelist for Sally Agalova, who is director of global learning and development at Celestia. Okay. So I'm going to get us started. First of all, ask each of our panelists to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how. What you currently do. Can everyone see Leslie, by the way? Okay. Is it on the way? Okay. So Leslie, would you like to start?
I was hoping you wouldn't say that. Okay, so hola. Hi everyone. My name is Leslie Lucin Rojas and I am foremost an educator. Right now I am a teacher at Northern Secondary School. It's my first year teaching. So I can ask all your questions about first year teaching.
Is that it? You want to make it known? What do you teach?
Okay. Oh, sorry, yes. I teach Spanish and careers, but I teach students.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Smith. I currently work with the Ministry of Government Services. I graduated here at York in June of last year, and I'm just starting my career with the government. So. There's lots of opportunities once you're in, and I love where I'm at right now.
Okay. My name's Mary Barnes Amoroso, and I am, unlike Leslie, I'm in my 32nd year of teaching, and I'm actually just about to retire from teaching from the Toronto Board, but I'm about to start my own school with some colleagues. So we never really retire, right?
Yeah.
The old teachers just keep recycling themselves. I taught at the elementary level for 4 years, and I went to work at the Ministry of Education for a couple of years, and then I switched to the secondary panel, and I've taught, I studied French and social science and history when I was at Glendon College, the Glendon part of York University, and so I've used that to be an immersion French teacher, and then I moved into guidance 7 years ago.
Hi everyone, I'm Andrea Celogaglio. I graduated with the from York in 2007 with a bachelor degree in French Studies in 2007 and an honors bachelor in French Studies and Spanish in 2009. Since then, I've worked in various industries. Most recently, I'm the marketing manager for Global Trade Consulting for Livingston International, which is a global trade company.
And we have Marcelia.
Hi, Marcelina Galvin, and I graduated from York with a specialized honors in both French and Italian in 1986, a long time ago. Currently, I work at Celestica. I'm the director of global learning there, and my experience has always been in human resources, so I've had the opportunity to work in a number of companies in a variety of sectors. So I've worked in retail, aerospace, manufacturing, marketing, CPG, always in the HR field. And I found that my language studies really supported the role that I took in a number of opportunities because I, as a manager of people, I always had the opportunity to manage people that did not always necessarily live in Toronto, but in Quebec. So the French language piece definitely was an asset to have as I manage and try to communicate with folks outside of Toronto.
Thank you. So my next question is sort of a follow-up to our introductory question. Is so thinking back, some of you just recently graduated, but can you tell us a little bit about your career story and how you went from being at York to where you are now? And were there any pivotal moments or anybody who inspired you or helped you along the way? Like basically, what sort of led to where you are now?
Okay, I didn't say this when I spoke, but I graduated 2 years ago from York. I have 3 degrees from York. I have a specialized honors in psychology, specialized honors in Spanish, and then teacher's college as well here from York. And if I have to choose, it's hard to choose one pivotal point in your career because everything and everything you do is like little seeds that you plant along the way that you kind of go and pick up after. But if I have to, maybe choose. I would have to say it was when, in 2007, with Professora Maria Figueroa, who was here, who introduced us, and we worked together to create the literary magazine in Theosis. You can have copies at the end, we have. But it was when it opened up the idea that I could do something with this need that I wanted to help out and to create a higher level learning for students. And it's kind of, I saw possible. There were so many things that you could do with your career. And then I applied that year for teaching and master's because I didn't know where I wanted to go. And then I didn't get into my master's, so I went into the field of teaching. But that doesn't mean that I regret it in any way. On the contrary, I've learned a lot. But it's that notion that you'll have many routes or many, you know, paths that you could take, and you can always go back unless you're thinking of applying. And then we'll talk about how I got into the job.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. Rebecca.
So probably the most important thing for me getting into my career was I had to bite the bullet and take a very entry-level position, and I was working as a summer student, making minimum wage over the summer, and I was very unsure about what was going to happen next. You know, while everyone else is making above minimum wage and you're struggling and you're, you know, dealing with student debt and whatnot, that was probably the most important thing because, you know, you either make more money or you get your foot in the door and work from there. So that was, I mean, taking that student summer position really opened up a lot of opportunities because from there you network and from there you have an internal job search engine, so you have access to a greater amount of jobs. So that really led It was a good stepping stone for me to enter into a more permanent position.
In the summer program that you're talking about is government.
Yeah, it's an Ontario Public Service summer student program. So you're making minimum wage, you're doing, you know, trivial jobs, but in the end, it pays off. So.
I did that.
Yeah.
I did that too.
Yeah.
But
you do bike.
Yeah.
Mary.
After I finished my first year of university, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I went on an exchange to Norway, and that started an enormous saga. I ended up taking off for 4 years, and in the course of those 4 years, I went and lived in France. And so then I learned to speak French and learned to love French, and then the saga continued. I ended up going to Africa, and when I was in Nigeria, I had contracted an illness, and I needed to stay for a place for a while. So I ended up offering to volunteer at a school, and then they ended up hiring me. And then I worked there for a while. I crossed the continent, and I'm in Rwanda. Once again, I needed to stay for a while, and I again volunteered my time, and again they hired me. And then I decided, seems to be a pattern emerging here. Maybe I should become a teacher. So I came back to Canada and I found out about Glendon. I had never heard about Glendon before. And I went to Glendon and I had a wonderful experience. So I did concurrent ed. So by that point I was in second year, I did concurrent ed and I started out as an elementary teacher. And my original intention was not to be a French immersion teacher, but they needed French immersion teachers. So I got hired immediately and anyway, there have been all kinds of pivotal, but I think there are opportunities that have presented themselves throughout my career, and that looks interesting. I think you kind of have to seize those. But having the French not only opened my eyes to another culture, another literature, many peoples throughout the world, it also led to jobs.
My story is similar and not to the previous panelists, and I think it is absolutely true, and I'll continue what you started saying, that the language degree is one of the most versatile that you could possibly have, because it enables you to enter a variety of fields where employers are sometimes willing to teach job skills for the specific jobs rather than teach a whole language. Right, so I started, I was an international student here at York. So my first job was here on campus. That time it was quite restricted. The international students could only work on campus. So I held various part-time positions at York in various departments. Once I graduated, I started working in the pharmaceutical industry where I worked for about 4 years in healthcare. And then I changed the career completely in telecommunications. So I worked at Research in Motion. I was the senior manager of business operations for Latin America, where I used my primarily Spanish. I also speak Portuguese. I worked there for a while. And most recently, I'm the product manager for Global Trade Consulting, which also is very global in scope. So the more languages you know, the more you can communicate with people from various cultures and in different languages, the more you can bring to the job and the more you can achieve. So pivotal points, just like the previous panelists mentioned, there are several. It's very difficult to trace down. It's partly opportunities that happen and partly opportunities that you create for yourself, according to what you like or you know, carve your own path down the way.
A lot of the messages that I've heard resonate with me, and so at the time I was a York student. I recall my professors saying, "This is the greatest degree. You are above everyone else," and how good we were. So when I graduated, there was a bit of snobism when I left here, and thought, "Of course everyone wants me. Why not?" My professor said I was the best thing ever, and the degree is the best thing ever. So why not? And it's at the time it was eating humble pie. you know, it was going out and thinking, well, what would you like to do? And I'm thinking, well, how can I make more money? I want your job necessarily, right? So I think it was, I think Rebecca hit it, it was, you know, eating that humble pie, and you have to start at the bottom at some points. And it was, what do I want? Do I need to gain experience, or do I come with some experience, and what do I bring to the party? And with me it was, geez, I could talk your ear off, I could communicate in a number of languages, and I could recite poems and a whole bunch of things, but really, what did I bring to the party? And so I had to start at the bottom. And, you know, when I looked around the room and I thought, I've got a degree, I just graduated, and people are giving me orders, you know, in terms of, can you photocopy this? Can you do that other thing? I'm like, this isn't what I want. But it was, again, in yourself, you have to say, what do you want longer term? And are you willing to pay a price of some sort? And for me, it was, I've got to start something. I have to build my skills and capability outside of the languages, outside of the communication. Are there other things that I can learn? And I had to learn the business world, which I had limited experience from summer jobs, but nothing that, you know, someone that had a degree in business administration would have. So that was the pivotal point for me to really come back and say, geez, great, I've got a degree, but now I may have to start over again. And so I kept an open mind in terms of everything that I learn and everything that I do will get me to that next place. And I never really sat down to say, I'm going to be a director of HR, or I'm going to go into this industry. It was keeping an open mind to learning. And doing things that were developmental and things that were a little more archaic. But the other thing that I would say that was pivotal to me is the people that I met. Mm-hmm. I worked with some really good people. I was very lucky. I had very good mentors, and I kept connected to them. And I always, you know, made my voice be heard in that this is not what I want to do longer term. I want to do more. I want to get into other areas. And taking the opportunities as they were given to me, even if it was coordinating a training session or setting up chairs in a room, it was making sure that I would expose myself to those opportunities, get connected to people, and just be happy that, you know, at some point this will change, but I need something to build put on my resume so that I can move that to that next place.
Okay, thank you. I think I'll stay with Marcia. Just to follow up on what you've been showing. I think what I've heard from all the panelists is that at some point throughout your career, you've had to, it was important that, to be open to opportunities, to be open to learning, to be open to meeting people and networking and all of that, and to be open to creating your own opportunities as well. So I wanted to follow up on that and ask, you know, is there any specific advice you would have, you'd give to the students and new graduates who are graduating from various foreign language programs? They ask you, what can I possibly do with my degree in Spanish or in French studies or what have you? And, you know, how can I get a job? And, you know, how can I find meaningful work?
I think what you have to look at is, what are those transferable skills that you have?
Yeah.
So, you know, the language piece in terms of understanding and knowing a different language, that is a skill, definitely. But what are those transferable things? And all of us have had opportunities where we've coordinated things, where we've taken the lead on something. Even if it's coordinating a wedding, you know, you've had to organize, time manage. Take the opportunities and embellish that. Do not look at it as menial things or tasks, but what do you look at in terms of the event and what were the skills that you used to accomplish that? And outline those more in a skills resume as opposed to an experience resume. And really talk about those successes and what you did, because the likelihood is that, you know, unless you bring a whole bunch of experience and things to the table, most of us would start at some entry-level role in some place and environment. And so it's making sure that once you get your foot in the door and you build that credibility and you get some wins under your belt, that's what then sells you to that next position or that next opportunity. But starting somewhere, it's looking at what have you learned, what do you have, and how can you articulate that in terms of the skills that jobs are looking at.
Andrea? I would just have to reinforce that. Building on the skills that you have, realizing your strengths and playing on your strengths. So take a critical look at yourself, identify sometimes what you like to do is also what you're good at, because you are naturally invested and you want to perform well in that area. But take a good look at what your strengths are, and continuously develop your skills. Just like Marcelia mentioned, coming out from university, it doesn't prepare you for the business world. But you have acquired skills even within the courses that you take that will help. Analytical skills, creative skills, communication skills, teamwork, all these can be applied in a number of positions or in a number of industries. So continue to build on what you have, always take on new initiatives, and they may not be given to you, but you have to ask for them. If you're given a job, do that specific aspect the best way you can, and even try to always think of ways that you can improve it. You're asked to arrange the chairs, try maybe to think what format would work better. Simple things like that, that allow you to experiment with, that allow you to learn things, to receive feedback, to be recognized. And just like Marcelia mentioned, build on those when you create your resume and as you move from one position to the other, highlight those specific skills that you have gained in order to get to the next level.
Wow, fabulous. I think sometimes people have a tendency to view a BA, any BA, as being, well, what are you going to do with that? And I feel that a BA is short form to anybody else, that there are major time management skills that you have had to acquire and hone. You've been able to take a series of instructions, i.e. what the professor has asked you to do, and submit it in a particular time frame and according to the specifications that you were asked to give. You're often asked to do that in company with others and in coordination with others. And those are those time management and team skills are really, really useful. And being able to listen carefully to what was asked of you, those are all very transferable for many work sites. I am a firm believer in kind of volunteering or being part of organizations. As you say, I'm not necessarily looking at it from a lucrative point of view because I enjoy it, but that puts you in contact with people and opportunities present themselves. If people see you as an interested, enthusiastic kind of person who likes to get in there, they're going to put out suggestions to you, and then it's up to you to kind of grab it. And sometimes that means taking a risk, and sometimes that means going out a little further than what you thought you were good at. So that also means being not afraid to fail or look silly at times. We don't deliberately put ourselves in positions where we're going to look silly, but sometimes we have to put ourselves out to the edge of our skill set to get better. So I guess, and if you do have a good experience either in a voluntary job or in a small entry-level job, I firmly believe in keeping in contact with those people that you found to be mentors. There's a reason you connected to them. We don't connect well to everybody. There's a reason why certain people took you under their wing or gave you wise advice. It behooves you to, that's gold. Don't lose it. Stay in contact with those people. Think hard about what they said to you about chances that you might take for the future.
I think the most important question I have been asked in terms of career decisions was actually at one of the events by the Career Center, and it was what can you do with your degree, and the lady who was organizing it said, you have to stop asking yourself what you can do with your degree and start asking yourself what's important to you. Because at the end of the day, we all graduate with a BA. We're all going to be going after those same entry-level jobs in a different fields. But you have to ask yourself what's important to you. And from there, you can make your career career decisions, and you're not going to be stuck doing something that you are not passionate about, because if you go into something that drives you, you're always going to do better than if you just go into something that's convenient. So I would say definitely just forget what your degree is and just start, you know, focusing on what is important to you. And from there, you know, then you can use your experiences and things like that to support your career decisions.
Yeah, that's excellent. You all touched on many different points. It's hard to know what to say.
Yeah, that's true.
What I do want to say, though, is it's great to know your skills, your strongest skills, but it's also very important to know the areas that you can improve on. The reason why I'm saying this is because grammar, as a student of language, grammar is not my strongest point. It has never been. And yet, I've taken a position to teach grammar. You know, but it is through the notion when I apply for it and I said, what am I doing? You know, this is not my area of expertise. Who am I to go into a class and say to the student what this is, where I don't even remember what it is, right? So it was that notion of I felt like, it's like Mira was saying, I felt like at the end of that class saying, this could go very, very wrong, very, very fast. But I said, no, the notion was, I'm going to reteach it to myself again.
Yeah.
And then so I can teach it better, right? And it's that notion of knowing where the areas that you can improve on and then focus on those. Because once you do that and you're not afraid to open doors, you're not just closed minded. So I graduated with a BA in business administration. I need to work and I need to have the CEO position. No, when I graduated 2 years ago, I was working as risk protection as a documental specialist in English, filling out forms, right? Making minimum wage. And it had nothing to do with teaching. But then I said, yes, it does. It has to do with teaching. I'm meeting new people. I'm developing a network. And I am teaching these people about things, and they're teaching me. So it's like the notion of having an open mind where you know your strength. You're not afraid to make mistakes, because it will happen. And just opening up your mind to whatever is there. Networking is very important. We throw that word out there all the time. You must network, okay? What does that mean? Because a lot of times we say, yes, you must network. What does it mean? That means to be human, okay? You have to be human. You have to socialize with the person beside you. You have to say, good morning, hi, how are you, how is your day? It's basic and human interaction. That's all there is. Because I'm going to remember someone better if they, when I looked at them, they looked at me in the eyes, as opposed to they just kind of, it's basic, and we take it for granted. And I think that's where everyone is.
Can I just add something? I do a lot of on-campus recruitment for various organizations that I work with. Exude confidence. And I think that's what everyone is saying. People that look down, you know, we want to see a package. And the resume, we understand as students, you know, when the experience may not be there, but we're looking at what are those skills that I can grab onto? What's the drive? What keeps them up? What's that motivation? So the confidence piece is critical. Sell yourself. You know, to everyone's point, look them in the eye, you know, exude that you can do it, but not arrogance, because then, that's, you know, that pisses people off, right? It's like, well, yeah, right, go find something else. But it is confidence, and that you bring value to any company and any organization. You may not have the experience, but you've spent 4 years of your life, 3 years of life, 5 years, 10 years, studying and learning things and interacting and building those. Sell that, and really ensure that, the questions people ask are, what are your strengths, what are your areas of development, what would you bring to the table, what did you enjoy most in school, why did you take this major, this minor, you know, prepare for those, like, the why questions, because what we look at is patterns of behavior, and past patterns will lead to future patterns of behavior.
So I said it all very beautifully. So I think at this point we can probably take some questions from the floor. Does anyone have any questions? Be shy.
Actually, you know, I don't have a question, but you know what, I am very thrilled to be here just because of the positivity that I feel from you, and it's very refreshing, because oftentimes when you go to some kind of a seminar or whatever, there's a lot of bad points. but when it comes to jobs, and I have been around for a long time, I'm 43, I'm finishing my French degree at the end of this semester, and I'm very proud of that. And I've done a ton of different jobs, and the only way I got the job is because of what you said. And thank you.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to hear you.
I want to echo the sense of hope that and the passion that you all of you bring to this conversation. I think it's just wonderful. So does anyone have any questions? Yes.
I'm a faculty member here, and it's more of a question for Andrea and Marcelia. If you had a message to give to the students that they would take class to their profs, how the courses that they're taking can help them in, not in teaching, sorry, because it's sort of obvious in a way, but outside teaching, what would you like the students to bring to the class and tell the prof that, how they can put that in better for their future career?
I'm just going to repeat the question because you are videotaping. So the question is, if you could provide some feedback to your former professors about how to better structure the classes or better prepare you for the business world and jobs in the business world, what would that feedback look like? Okay. Andrea, would you like to start?
Sure. I think it's with languages, as I mentioned before, it's a great degree to have. It's a versatile degree, but it's not like a trade. It's not like you go to a college, you do a few years, and you know a trade. You know to do something, but it's more subtle than that. And the type of skills that you learn that help you in the business world, I would say there's many. Literally, everything has a parallel. Including grammar. My colleague mentioned grammar. Grammar structures your way of thinking. Grammar is analytical, is logical. Learning that or understanding that will help you in the future. Literature and analyzing a piece of literature that helps you on the creative side, writing an essay, the creative side of it will definitely help when you need to create something or implement something in your future workplace. Something that might surprise you, but that was extremely invaluable to me, was written communication. Being able to express yourself concisely, logically, in a logical flow that makes sense in a workplace is invaluable. That means whether you're leaving an email, whether you're leaving a voicemail, being able to articulate what you're trying to communicate, that has been critical and is critical. You can be intelligent, you can be the smartest person in your head, but if you're not able to come across and connect with other people and make them understand what you're trying to say, in the workplace it doesn't help too much. You can write a book or something. But, so I would say that in terms of languages, definitely communication skills, written and oral communication skills would make the top of it. And the rest you exercise throughout. Teamwork, there might be a project where you need to collaborate. I know that in my personal time, I also like to tutor. And I continue to tutor since I graduated from university. And a lot of the times students, high school or junior high, they complain, oh, we have to do this project, and the people that I do the project with, they don't do their part, and I have to do more, and that's reality. So if you come back to your professor asking for less teamwork, you might get it, but at the end of the road, when you're in a work environment, you're going to have those colleagues that don't cooperate. So you have to keep writing emails. You have to interact with them or get whatever you can. So really, this is all part of the package. That's.
Yeah. I think I see it in a different perspective. So I agree with everything you said. And in addition to that, I think back to the workplace. It's when there are assignments done. So in university, we succeed because of who we are. We study hard, we get good marks, we don't study that much. It pays off in how the effort we put in. I find that when people are forced to be put in group environments or team projects, I think that's where the rubber hits the road. I have two kids, and they hate projects because so-and-so doesn't do enough, and how do I do this, and I have to take it on my own, or here, over to you. So I think the opportunity of introducing probably that more collaborative, those collaborative assignments may help in terms of that working relationship with others, as opposed to me, myself, and I, and the success of that. And those postmortems, so after an assignment, what went well, what didn't. Because that happens in the business world, right? So, you know, we succeed in business because of a we, it's not an I. And as, you know, you enter into that world and you get feedback and your performance reviews, because, you know, you have to get reviewed and paid appropriately for the work that you put in, it's difficult to hear when, you work quite as nice to your colleagues. Mm-hmm. That's a tough message, right? Well, especially with someone, oh, what do you mean I'm not nice? I've just started working. How can anyone think I'm not nice? But it is those skills that will allow you to succeed in the work environment. It's because you succeed through the relationships that you build, through the collaboration that you exude. And we're in a global environment. The world's getting smaller. So, there are days I call China, India, I'm working nights to suit times, and you have to appreciate what they are feeling. Not everyone works the same way, not everyone tackles things in the same way, so being very open to that. So I think the only thing that I would add to what you have said is that I think we have to find opportunities to allow our students to collaborate in environments. And I bring myself back to when I did my degree, writing essays and doing things well. I thank one professor because she gave us the option of you either write an essay or you take the works and you put it in a play. That means you have to write the play, produce it, everything. So we thought it was easier not to write the essay. So we all chose to produce this. Oh. And it took longer for us. Yeah. But we were a class of 20 individuals that had to get together, divide and conquer. So if you wanted to act, great, you could do that. But in addition to that, you were writing, proposals, you were calling people for funds, like a whole bunch of things. And I thought, found that was very useful and good time spent. At the time, I thought, geez, I should have written an essay. But looking back, you learn a lot from it. So that's the only advice I would give. But it's a difficult one because there's a curriculum that has to be followed in order for one to learn the material and become an expert in a certain area. So it's a balance of what can and cannot be done.
One mention I would like to make again about group projects, because I find that in the academic world, the group project is handed on to the group. They have to figure it out, and then they come back with the assignment. I would have liked to see in the classes that I learned, and I noticed that in the professional life, there's more, and you use the word collaborative. It's people sitting in a circle and exchanging opinions, getting a lead from one another, rather than putting them in a room and letting them figure out and submit it at the end of the semester. So having some sort of group discussions where people are not afraid to speak their mind, where they can give ideas, when they create something collectively, and they can feel proud about the participation that they had in a certain project. And they are acknowledged by their professor, just like we're acknowledged in the work environment, we're acknowledged by our manager, right? I think that's... I would have enjoyed that type of projects. And having worked, another mention that is on a slightly different angle is having worked in international or multinational companies, and having had to work with individuals from very different cultures, I would have liked to see more material or more kind of projects or interaction that have to do with Spanish-speaking or French-speaking nations or individuals or organizations, or some sort of exposure to not only the Canadian French or not only the a specific type of Spanish but something more. So whether it's an article or a project, but something that showcases other Francophone or Spanish-speaking.
Or partnership. Mm-hmm. I think we have to start to partner with other academic institutions if we want that transferring of culture knowledge. We can only learn so much, and we're lucky we live in Toronto, so it's very multicultural. Mm-hmm. But you know, to piggyback on what you said, it's partnering with, are there opportunities to have assignments where your team is made up of people from Toronto, Quebec, if it's French, Paris, Spain, you know, look at outside of that and say, what's the project, what's the assignment, and have them, let them figure it out, you know, make things available in terms of technology or whatever is required, because it is expensive to do WebExes, but it's allowing that partnership and breaking down those walls of everything we learn is in these four walls or in this province. And people don't necessarily have to travel, but there are assignments, I think, that we can think of to allow people to collaborate, work together, and run into those issues that they will be exposed to outside.
In the various positions that I've had, and most notably with Research in Motion, working with Latin America, my team was situated in Latin America. I was seeing them twice a year. So the complexities and the difficulty of communicating with these individuals, getting things done on time, I think that would be fantastic if there was some sort of similarity, collaboration, international partnership, and the type of remote, either remote management or remote collaborations that we come across in our business, in the business world. That would be great.
Do Leslie, Rebecca, or Mary have any comments on that question?
No, I think the idea of cross-cultural collaborations is very necessary, because in all aspects of the workforce, because of forces of globalization, there are going to be more cultural exchanges, and I think that it's very important, because, I mean, knowing the language is only part of it, but you also have to appreciate and understand the culture in order to fully engage on the same level of communication with that person. So, for sure.
Another question from the floor?
You mentioned that you wanted to start a new school.
Yeah, I'm
what
in.
What kind of a new school? What is it?
It's
can you tell us more about this new.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, it's called ECLAS, School of Performing Arts. And we're starting it out as a school for just for the summer, because we want to get our feet wet first. It's a group of us. And we are offering, at the beginning, we're starting with the kinds of enrichment drama courses that you can't get in most high schools: playwriting, improvisation, production, l'art dramatique, so in French. Just a minute, there's one more. Can't think of it, hold on, I'll look at my brochure. Playwriting, theater development, director's craft, acting, improvisation, and production, and art dramatique. No, that's it. And we're working with actors and techies, like real live people who are working in the theater, and kids will be able to get a credit, and we're doing it at Hart House in the summer. And so, it'll be a month-long program of enrichment in dramatic arts for kids who are really passionate about dramatic arts and who would like to do that in the summer as opposed to doing something else in the summer, I guess you could say. So I just one thing, though, I would like to add. Sometimes we talk about schools as and universities as being, you know, ivory tower-ish or not the real world. And that is true to some extent. And yet, when I speak to my sister, who works in a bank, and when I speak to my brothers, both of whom are freelancers, you know what? There's a lot of similarity between what happens in schools and what happens in universities and what happens in the business world, because we're human. And the same kinds of issues that come up that I hear my sister talking about with her manager and the people that she manages, and my brothers who are always looking for the next contract, holy moly, it's like some of the skills that you're learning in the academic setting are most definitely applicable to beyond. One of the things, though, that I think is really kind of interesting, and I'm not sure if they're doing it in the universities as much, but we're trying to do it a lot more in the secondary level, is, and my guess is you could use it in projects too. There's a whole huge curriculum, but then there's the essential part. and we're now starting to say, if we only had this much time, what's the essential bit that people have to get, that we want students to learn? And if we're doing backwards design, how then do we design our course so that they're going to get that? And I bet that you can use that in the business world, and I bet you can use that in all kinds of fields, because it's all about essential learning, and it's all about human behavior. And so, I would just like to say that much of what I've learned as being a conscientious teacher for 32 years is helping me as I'm trying to put together this business, right? So I please do not denigrate or think less of what you've done, because it doesn't kind of, because you're not maybe immediately and intimately involved with the business world. Many, many, many skills that you learn in one setting are transferable to another.
It's,
yeah.
It's your passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was going to say, if you're not interested in that part, don't even go, because it's like being fake, right? You can only act so long, and then it'll drive you crazy and you'll leave. So you have to follow your heart. And you may have some bumps along the way. So again, it's keeping an open mind. What's that tolerance level that you have? You know, because the bucket gets full for everyone at different points. You know, it's understanding who you are. So as you go through your job search, it's knowing who are you in terms of your strengths, your areas of development. What are your values? What drives you and what doesn't? And where can you get that? Where can you kind of get the whole package? Knowing that you may not get everything all at once, but you know, 50% is there, 40%, whatever your tolerance level is. Just to piggyback on what you said, you know, I always say, I deal with people all the time, and when people say, well, I'd love to get into HR because I love people, I'm thinking, no way. You know, it's like, whoa. You know, work would be a great place. Too bad people are there. There are many personalities around there, and you're right. Whatever happens in the academic world happens. It's life. You know, you deal with people. I'm sure your neighbors, you've got nice neighbors, you've got crummy neighbors. It's like, it's people. But the success is, how do you deal with the issues, and how do you deal with the people? Not one, you know, one size does not fit all. And that's the key to success. To your point, you can be academically brilliant. You can speak, you know, talk your mouth off. You can't interact with people. You can't work, because you're not working on your own. You have to interact.
Thank you. Any questions from the floor?
You kind of mentioned resume, and that like there's so many different ways of creating a resume, and I would assume that your five individuals would probably go very different resume each. But what is it that did any of your employers end up giving you feedback on the way you wrote your resumes, or is that something that is done? Just any other recommendations when it comes to?
So the resumes that each person wrote was probably very different. So keep in mind the job that you were aiming for, or the job that you currently have, what advice would you recommend with regard to how to construct a resume for that particular job target?
I'll start off, because I teach careers, right? And so we are actually working in creating your own resumes, and what do you need to have in a resume? And it's funny, because you talked about, right, are you doing a skills resume as opposed to a timeline resume, or a combination of the both? And I actually asked my department head, what was it about me? I wanted to know why I got hired as opposed to somebody else. It's kind of important what I did right, because when I left that interview, I thought I had bombed it. I went home, I took all my stuff, and I threw it out, because I said, no more, I'm not teaching. Okay, right? Because I felt I had done so horribly wrong. And in fact, you said, what we saw in you was passion, you know, and that's what we want for us. We saw you, we weren't afraid to say, you know what, can you repeat the question? I really don't get it, or I don't remember what the imperfect is, you know, because that was one of the questions. And she said that I had in my resume concise, but everything I had done, even if it had nothing to do with teaching, I had put in there who I was and what made me who I am right now. And I talked about what I learned from working at a manufacturing company, which is so far apart from, you could think about it, from teaching, but it is so much the same. So in that particular order was, I had, you know, the history of where I am, all the things that I did. But before I sit down and wrote my resumes, what I tell my students all the time is, we're going to have what we call a brag sheet. You sit down and you write just for yourself everything and anything that you've done, you're proud of, that you have done. Whether it's be I help, you know, an old lady cross the street, till I volunteered, anything and everything you've done. And then from then you can have different kinds of resume, but it's still who you are. And I think it's very important that you don't forget that everything you do, for as small as it is, for somebody else, an employer can actually see, oh, this person has this there. And then they'll ask you, oh, you put this in here, can you elaborate a bit more about that? And then it gives you an idea to showcase who you truly are. So it's very important that you, to concise again, is every part of what you do is important. And some people actually remove them from the resume, certain things that might have nothing to do with it. I don't know where the truth lies there.
Rebecca? For me, applying for the Ontario Public Service is a very fair process because it doesn't matter who you know. You're putting off a resume just like everyone else, and they're basing you on your resume. There's no, you know, calling and saying, hi, can I set up an interview or meeting with somebody who does the hiring in person. You're just sending your resume off, and that's it, and that's what they base you on. So for me, a good resume was very important, and I took the resume writing course here, which really helped, and I completely revamped my resume. And what was important was, okay, you know, I'm a new student, I'm a recent graduate, I don't have a lot of experience, but you're playing up things that are, you know, your transferable skills that, okay, you may have, you know, been a soccer coach, which, you know, is completely irrelevant, but what did you do? What sets you apart from everyone else that you're going to be the best candidate for the position that you're going to, you know, make that company or that business better? So, I mean, it's really, you know, playing on things, transferable skills, things that you have that, you know, you're going to be able to offer that nobody else can.
An interesting thing to add to resumes sometimes is to describe something you've been involved in and then to put what it resulted in. Mm-hmm. I was involved in this committee and we produced this to time, to budget. I was involved in developing this course outline, and we've had this percent increase in the number of students who have been successful in achieving the expectations of the course. So it forces you to think about what have I done and what have been the tangible results of what I have done. I think that's something useful, besides, in addition to what's already been mentioned.
Absolutely. That was exactly the point that I wanted to make. So not only listing, you know, exhaustively all the things that you have done, but linking it, mm-hmm. filling the dots. Because sometimes the employer or the person who reads the resume, if you say coordinated communication, what does that mean? What was the topic? What was the circumstance? It, just like Mary mentioned, coordinated communications that resulted in, you know, three additional partnerships. It gives a little bit of context. It helps showcase you better. Another thing, because this is a panel for language grads, if you do speak more than one language, I strongly encourage you to write the resume in both or as many languages as you speak. That is something, especially if you're looking for international opportunities, for opportunities in multinational companies, for networking, it really helps. You will learn mm-hmm. to position yourself in various languages. You will even enrich your vocabulary because you might use words that you don't necessarily use in an essay or in a poem that you have come across, right? So, but definitely, structuring, and these are things that I learned. I have not received any formal feedback on my resumes, but I have noticed the response that employers had to different resumes that I've had. So I've perfected myself, and this is exactly what I noticed that works. Rather than it has to be logical, mm-hmm. it should flow, You should start with probably the most impactful thing. Be concise, don't make it too long, because then you get diluted. But just like the first speaker mentioned,
Leslie,
I have always included all my experience in the resume. And I know some recommendations have been make it very targeted. If you're applying for a marketing position, include only marketing. If you're applying for customer service, include only. I don't believe in that. I think that that reduces somewhat your chances, because you are completely blindsided as to what are the transferable skills. What did this person do or achieve as a customer service representative that could be useful as a marketing communications manager? Because there are things that are similar. So I would list everything and allow your employer, you can tweak it, but allow your employer to see that, to see you as a rounded person with all your achievements in different languages.
I agree with everything, and you know, don't lie.
Yes.
Well, timelines are important. People will ask you, so what happened between this time and this time? You know, why were you not working? And there are good reasons, but you can't make it up, because a lot of companies today do have checks on degrees, on work experience, on a whole bunch of things. So your employment is conditional upon a number of checks being done, background checks. So that's why I reinforce, don't lie.
Yeah.
And I think coming out of school, depending on what you have, it's do I do skills or do I do, you know, skill experience, or do I list experience in terms of a timeline? I work for these companies here. I think that's the toss-up question that you have. And depending on what your skills are or what your experience is, that's where you can determine what the best format is. And sometimes it's a combination of the two. You know, you may have some history in terms of companies you've worked for, volunteer work you've done, and sometimes you want to highlight skills. The other little trick, if you're applying against a job profile itself, they've got an ad somewhere, use some of the words that are in that request or that ad, linked to that, because it. I know that a lot of companies, again, are going on online applications for resumes. They sometimes put in keywords,
yeah.
So usually it's the keywords that are
mm-hmm.
on that job spec that they would key in, and then your name comes up, so you want that.
Mm-hmm.
Your extracurricular activities, critical. You know, again, it's who are you as a person? So you're not just a person who has worked, or gone to school, or you do other things. So the extracurricular activities are key, and there are times sometimes just to break the ice. I know that I do it when I interview people, is, hey, so you play hockey, or you've been skiing, or whatever it is. It just brings people more relaxed, and we talk about that a bit, and then you start down. So it gives you kind of a latch point that people can kind of connect to you. And the last thing, because it did happen to me, do not make it hokey. Look at who you're applying for. So if you're applying to a bank, they're usually pretty, you know, direct marketing companies. So look at your audience in terms of what's happening. So most recently, I'm looking for a person. I got a box, Pure Later, and I had to go pick it up in our delivery room. So, you know, went down and thought, geez, I wonder what I bought. What did I order? Get this box. It's not heavy. I open it up, and there's a Starbucks cup with a resume in it. I'm thinking, this is so bizarre. What does Starbucks have to do with the position I'm looking for? And I thought, if she wanted to impress me, maybe a gift card for a coffee in Starbucks. I didn't understand what the theme was of it. No, needless to say, it wasn't someone that I would have hired just because of the experience. But it's still, the first impression is a Starbucks cup with no note, nothing, just this resume inside a cup. So I didn't get that. So, you know, again, some level of professionalism, know who you're sending your resume to.
I want to touch upon the extracurricular one. Because that's a huge piece that, because when I remember when I had a part-time job older in my York, I worked at a daycare. So I had something to put as a job, but a lot of students nowadays don't have a lot of work experience, and you think, if I don't have that, do become involved within our organization at your university. Not that because I'm, you know, advocating for enterosis, which is what I do all the time, 24/7. But do, it's very important because this is where you get to connect and network with other students and with people from other faculties and from other programs. And these are later on where you go, oh, I remember you, and you know, you're looking for a job, or no, this is where you actually become involved. And I'm so glad to see the YU Connect that York just implemented now, the co-curricular one. You know, I didn't have that when I went to York, where it's online and you get actually put in your hours of the work you've done, and York gives you an actual record of what you've done extracurricular, which I think is very important, and you use this. It's very important.
So I do want to ask a question, and then I'll go back to the floor and see if they've got any questions. But based on your own experience, looking back at what you did, what specifically would you say you did in terms of your job search to get to land you the job that you got, or your very first job after graduation?
I have a story. I have a lot of stories. To become a teacher, you know, you have to do an extra degree outside of your regular bachelor, right? Which I did that, right, consecutive. But after you do that, you apply to the Ontario College of Teachers and you get your certification, but you have to apply to the boards, okay? So I applied to the board in 2010, the year that I graduated. I was so excited, I finished my application, it was beautiful, I send it in, but my official certificate as an Ontario Certified Teacher wasn't ready yet. So you send the interim one. Okay, so come September, come October, I'm thinking, I haven't heard anything all summer. What did I do wrong? Because obviously I did something wrong, not to get called. You're always thinking that, what did I do wrong? I called them up and she said, no, your application wasn't completed. I'm like, what? No, you never actually received your official certification. And that was my fault for not following through into making sure that I had the right paperwork that the company, in this case CDSB, because after that, that's it. I was not selected for the year. I had to wait till the next year to apply.
Oh my goodness.
So here I was thinking that I'm a horrible person and nobody wants me, where in fact it was because I didn't follow proper, you know. So then after I got, it's who you know, it's who you are too, but a friend of mine who I worked with at the daycare had called me and said, because she was volunteering in the school, she said, I saw there was a position available to teach international languages, Spanish, with continuing education. And I said, okay, I called in, and they said, yeah, you don't need to be part of the union to apply, right, because there's a certain number of protocols you must follow. And I applied for it. Now, this is a position way below my qualifications, so to speak, right, because you don't need to be a teacher to teach for the continuing education. You can just go, as long as you know the language and you have the culture, you can teach it. I applied and I went in and I got it. And then a part of me, I'm not going to deny it, a part of me felt too good for this. You know, because you're thinking, oh my God, 7 years of school and this is what I get, supply. So you got that moment where, and then I said, no, this is an opportunity that was given to me. And I took it. And actually it meant I was on the board. And it meant that when I applied and I showcased that I was not afraid to just be part of the board. So I think it's very important that you apply, you make sure you apply correctly. That's a lesson I learned, is to really follow through on your application, right? Because after the year later, I got called for the eligible to hire list based solely on what I had showcased. So obviously, if my application had been, and I only got hired because I have Spanish, because they're not hiring right now on the boards. So the my key there was having that language, you know, degree. Because I could say all I want and I could teach it, but until you have the degree to say you can. And then that's a very important one.
Thank you.
I think for me, it was just diligence because I was applying to so many different entry-level positions. So I was just sending resumes off everywhere. And it's discouraging when you are sending so many resumes out and you're only getting so many calls back or interviews after that. But I mean, it's a process. And you know, I went to a lot of interviews. Some of them I were successful, some of them you weren't successful, but it's the exposure that you get, you know, going through the process. And you know, all different companies have different ways of hiring. So you learn, you know, what to what to do for each type of application, and even getting exposure going to the interviews, you know, you become more familiar with what they're going to ask you, what to expect, just things like that. So for me, it was just being very diligent and not getting discouraged. But in the end, it paid off. So.
I think it's knowing the target audience, spending a lot of time figuring out what are they looking for right now. So for example, if somebody were interested in teaching, the College of Teachers has a website, and they indicate where are going to be in the next 10 years, what are going to be the subject areas, what's the age level, like what are the demographics saying about what you need to do. And then when you're in, once you do get hired, you've got to do the same process, repeat mm-hmm. as necessary. What, if I want to have an interesting career, what additional qualifications do I need to get so that they'll look at me? So I think that would be know the target, do your research, and then give them what they want in the right package.
Okay. Absolutely, research the company that you're applying to. Spend a fair amount of time understanding their industry, their goals, as much as you can get from websites. The recruitment agencies are also a good way because they do offer that additional kind of help and support to match you with the job that would fit you well. And last but not least, also in line with networking, things like LinkedIn. If you know the name of the hiring manager, for example, research about them. See where they come from. What does their career look like? And that way you'll discover if you want to work for that company. You might discover through your research that you know what, this company is not in line with really what I want to do. And that's sometimes more important than having a job. And I had a period where I was unemployed for about 3-4 months. And I was in the situation where I had to look at different companies and think, is this job where I want to go with my career, or should I wait and prepare myself better and that opportunity, the opportunity that I'm looking for or that is right for me, will come maybe later, maybe not within the first month, but eventually, long term, it will pay off.
Andrea, I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to your own experience. Like you worked at Research in Motion before LinkedIn. So can you walk us through?
So I worked at Research in Motion, and then I was unemployed for a period of time. I was researching various companies in various areas, right? So I had an option either to continue in telecommunications or change. Now I had acquired a taste for marketing. So when I looked at myself, I said, okay, you know, I have the languages, I have these skills that I've acquired so far, but really what I really like to do is marketing. So I started narrowing down my search to a position that had the requirements that I was looking for. So had the marketing aspect, had the languages requirement, had the international component, because I strongly wanted to work for an international company that would give me exposure and an opportunity to interact with people from different cultures. I enjoy that tremendously. So it may have taken longer to find a position, but once you do, the fit is good. So you will feel good about your position. You feel that you can grow within the company of your choice. So that has been my experience. And it is not my personal experience, but I know people who have successfully used LinkedIn to search for jobs. So for example, introducing through a third party, right? So you see that the company that you're targeting, for example, they're within your extended network, there are 30 people that work for the company that you would like to work for. So then using your network in order to reach to the individuals that are working, for example, in the department, you know, you're looking for a supply chain position in a specific company, looking within your network and see if you can get an introduction or a recommendations, a referral internally for a position that might be open, because that will definitely increase your chances. You can still apply externally, follow the same protocol, but having someone submit internally a referral to human resources increases the chance that you will be at least asked for an interview.
And also, just to add to that, there are times where you may just cold call a company and start with the human resources department and say, I'm so-and-so, I'm in the process of, I need more information. Mm-hmm. Would someone be able to meet with me, talk to me, and half hour, whatever the time is, that helps. In terms of personally, again, I think I said it earlier on, I left university with an ego, which was quite big, and very confident. You know, I exuded confidence, and it was, at the time, the business degrees were far more valued, I think, than the arts degree. And so it was what was going to get me in, and it was back to the entry-level positions and trying to sell myself and all of that, and so it was starting at the bottom and moving around and looking for opportunities. And I remember I started in the IT department doing coordination with Crown Life, so an insurance company. And I thought, coordinate. So did it for 6 months, and I learned the whole thing and got bored. And then went to my boss and said, I'd like to do more. Can I train how to use email, or can I train how to use Excel? Or, and he said, sure, no problem. You know, here, work with so-and-so, they'll help you. But to my surprise, I didn't have that side of my brain really developed in terms of the technical piece. And I was lucky because in the company, Crown Life, they had an opening internally. So look for companies where you can grow, because usually most companies like to see talent move from within, especially at those entry-level positions. So that's a question that you can ask when you go through your interview process on, you know, are there opportunities to grow and develop with the company? Can we move? Whatever you'd like to drive. And then, again, it's back to looking at, I think you said it was embarrassing. I walked into work every day and thought, I can't believe I have a degree. 4 years I studied in France, I studied in Italy and Quebec, and I'm now taking orders from everyone else but myself, and thought, this is the worst thing ever, because most of my friends were all teachers, and when I heard their salaries, I was like, oh, geez, I should have gone into that, you know, it was great. And so it was this pride thing that came in place, but I kept, you know, it's like, I have to gain experience. And so when I landed in HR, again, at the entry-level position, so here we are again, another year of entry-level, it's back to making your boss know that you want to learn, that you want to grow, that you can do more than what the title says. So again, I was the coordinator, and within my first year, I started to design training programs. I started to deliver training programs. You know, by the time I left, I had curriculums under my belt where I was in front of groups of people. And it's taking that risk of, geez, you know, I think the pivotal point for me was when my boss got sick, and she had booked training sessions because she was going to take me under her wing, and we were going to design, develop all these programs, and she said, don't worry about it, everything is up here, I'll teach you. Great, this is excellent. She called in on Monday, the courses were going to start on Wednesday, and said, I'm not going to be in for I don't know how long, I'm very sick. And I thought, oh, great, where am I going to get this? And so what I did was, and she said, you can cancel everything or do it, I don't care. So I thought, Jesus, I'm not losing this opportunity. And I literally went in her office, went through binders, and you know, she allowed me to participate in meetings, so I knew what people wanted. And the night before, I would be designing to present the next day. That night, I'd go home till 3 a.m, do things, come in and present. And you know, looking back, I was in my early 20s with no experience. I am teaching people career pathing and career planning and leadership and management, but it's that risk. And I thought, well, I wrote essays, research is the same, I'm going to put some stuff together, I've been in enough sessions where I know. And that was the turning point where I thought, geez, I did it. And people around me came to me and said, I never thought you wouldn't do it. So it's building that circle and the confidence in yourself to take the risk. What's the worst that can happen? As long as, you know, if you're going into private sector, that business doesn't lose millions of dollars, you're okay. You know, if that happens, well then, you know, reconsider it. But it's really taking the risk and looking at those opportunities, and complacency, you know, in today's environment, not there. You know, you can't be steady Eddies and think, once I get in, I'll be here. Unless that's what you want and you're happy with that, but you have to keep up with the development and those skill building.
From what I've heard, if I could summarize, I think you just said complacency. Don't be complacent. You know, always look for the next challenge. Always look for opportunities. Always look for someone else to mentor you or to mentor, and to grow. Ways to grow and people to grow with and that kind of thing. And then you will continue to move forward in your career. Okay. Does anybody have a final question before we wrap up for the?
And
I guess you all do.
We look beat up, don't we?
I'm asking in terms of, I have a son who's very young. So, yeah, that took, I had to pause my career. I used to go to New York, but now I'm actually paused. So, that is my question. So, how were your husbands, how supportive were they? How difficult was it to raise a family in the time while you're striving for a career?
Okay. So, your question is more about how do you balance or family life with work life?
Yeah. How did you do that?
Personal life. I'll start. I have two children. Julia's now 19 and Alex is 16. When I worked at Bombardier Aerospace, I never worked so hard, but I never had as much fun. But my family never suffered as much. I forgot my kids in daycare. It was this adrenaline rush of, gotta do this, gotta do that. And I did forget my children in daycare. I forgot birthdays. It was just because I was so engaged in what I was doing. But I look back on it with fond memories because it is funny. How can a mother forget their children at daycare, you know? And lucky I had my mom was my emergency contact. And when I called her, I was like, how dare you? You know, but it's that balance. And I think for me, what worked is, although that time I forgot my children, 5:30 for me is the cutoff point. And I made it very clear to my employer. And I think employers have become more,
more demanding.
They're demanding, but I think they're more aware of that work-life balance. I think what you will find in organizations today is that there is importance placed on that work-life balance, whatever that means to you. So it's not that everyone leaves at 5, but there's flexibility from starting times, ending times, working at home. Technology has helped quite a bit, and I think it's that for me. It was my husband was also. Professional and works on his own, so he had his career, so we're both going down this path at 100 miles or 100 kilometers a minute, and all of a sudden that day of forgetting my kids at daycare was something's got to give, and so you have to readjust and never be embarrassed, because I had a real, again, if you're open with your manager, I had a good boss and allowed me that flexibility, but I had to tell myself to stop. Like, no one told me stay there till 10 o'clock, I did it. You know, so you have to tell yourself that at a certain time. So from that day on, the latest 5:30, and I would be out of there with, Blackberries and everything else, and I made it work. And it's harder when they're younger, because I can look back now and say, they're older, they're self-sufficient, they still like a routine, but I don't have to rush home for daycare or feed them or whatever. So it is difficult.
My kids are in their 20s now. I made lists and lists and lists and lists. So that I need to get this done, but this is really important. So this, I'm going to put this at this time of the day. There's no question that being a teacher, I had summers off, so I could be with my kids in the summer, but I was teaching demanding courses, and so when my kids went to bed, I started marking, and I marked until 11:30 every night. But I did get home early. So I think and when I watch my sisters, who also have kids and who also have jobs not in teaching, it sounds like it's a variation on a theme, that you a huge part of time management. That's why I mentioned don't undersell yourself from having completed a degree. That the time management skills that you learn here from having, and well, throughout your life, will serve you in other spheres.
So basically, regardless of your personal situation, you need to manage your time well so that you can have a personal life and a work life.
Yeah, but I really like, was it Esther?
What is your name?
Leslie? Yes.
Rebecca,
I'm sorry. Rebecca said that at the Career Center, they said something about decide what is really important to you and what your values are. And I think that, too, because there's lots of stuff that we can take on that really aren't essential to what we want. And I think when you have little kids, so they're essential, and I can certainly, I can see how, no, I can. I can imagine how. But you know, you'll have to probably do that a lot of times. All right, what is essential to me? What let's prioritize this day, or let's prioritize this week. Yeah, it'll work. less so than I, but. The kids kept French in university, and my son wants to go and live in Europe. He plays volleyball, and he wants to go play professionally. So he's kind of now realizing, oh, the French will actually come in useful because France and Belgium and Switzerland all have volleyball leagues. So anyway, yes. Yeah.
Oh, I don't have children yet. That would be suicide right now. This is my first year teaching, and I'm barely surviving. My marriage is barely surviving. Because it's very hard the first year, whatever it is that you do, you want to prove yourself. You want to prove that you can do it all. So that is the hardest point right now in my life, is balancing, you know, work and life, cooking and cleaning and before. And but what I want to say is, your career is not on hold. If you pardon me to say that right now, because your career is your lifelong journey, and it includes your children, it includes your partner, it includes your family, right? And so just because you're prioritizing that right now does not mean you can't go back after and then get another degree, right? You're just learning to prioritize for you what is important at this moment. And I think that's important for us to think, because, you know, it's a lifelong journey. And I'm a teacher right now, but I don't know what I'm going to be in the next 5 years. So it's important for us to know that there's a fluidity. You can change, you can adapt.
Women are good at multitasking. Mm.
And there's no right answer.
Yeah, there's no right answer.
There's no right answer. It's whatever works for you. You know, it's with anything. And what I have noticed over the years is that, you know, it's not just a woman problem, it's a man problem too. Males are
family.
Facing the same thing.
Yeah.
The dual working families, the work-life balance, they have to get home. So it's not just one gender anymore, but I never think that people are judging you, because it's whatever works for you. And if you're happy with that decision, with anything, it works, right? And you'll make it work for you. So there's no timeline, to Leslie's point. It doesn't mean that by the time, if you're, I'm not, you know, a director by 30 or a VP, but it doesn't matter.
Great, thank you very much. So this brings us to the end of our formal Q&A session. Our intention today was to provide you with an opportunity to hear from some York alumni, their career stories, and some insights that they've gained along the way, so that to give you a little bit of advice and hopefully inspire you as you move forward in your career journey as well. I want to thank our panelists for taking time out of their busy schedules. Leslie, Rebecca, Mary, Andrea, and Marcelia. Please. I also want to encourage all of you to come by the Career Center. We're just upstairs, Suite 202, up the stairs. We have many programs and events and days like this that can support you in as you move forward in your career journey. So whether you're still at the stage where you're wondering, what can I do with my degree in whatever it is that you're majoring in, or you have a goal in mind, it might be grad school, it might be getting a job with a specific organization, we can help provide support So at this time, I'd like to begin our informal networking mix and mingle. I'm going to ask the panelists to spread out through the room.